Ladies and gentlemen, sports fans alike, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky's Sports Talk Chicago, one of the couple, two, three best podcasts around. So sit back, grab yourself a cold one and a Polish sausage, park your keister in the French room, and listen to Bill Swirsky's Sports Talk Chicago.
In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose, as long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. This is your host, Sean. This is episode 126 of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago, and on this episode, we have the Cubs continue their role, and possibly with a Cy Young winner again, and the Bears making surprise moves and cuts. Check it all out on this episode of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. But first, as always, we'd like to thank our sponsor, the Rockford Ice Hogs. If you're not familiar with the Rockford Ice Hogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You get to see the stars of tomorrow today at family-friendly, affordable prices. You can season starts in just a few short weeks in October. You can get shirts, jerseys, tickets, and more at icehogs.com. Tell them Swirsky Sports sent you. All right, this is going to be a pretty short episode, I'm hoping, for a few reasons. One, it's the long holiday weekend and we're getting over and everyone's getting ready to go to work tomorrow. And two is you guys probably spent it having fun and relaxing and blah, 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 barbecuing. I spent my 3-day holiday weekend with the stomach flu and a bad case of vertigo. So pretty much anytime I'm standing up for more than 30 seconds, I get dizzy, the room starts spinning, and I have to lay down. Not fun. And the medication I'm taking for it makes me so exhausted, I crash out so hard I drool all over my pillow. So this was not the most fun weekend. But I was at the University of Wisconsin-Madison right after their big win against LSU. So that was a fun atmosphere to be around. I forgot how much fun a big football college campus can be on a Saturday after a win. So yeah, like I said, I'm going to try to breeze through some of this stuff. The Cubs statistics, this Cubs talk, we're going to kind of breeze through that. We know where they're at. The Cubs had a really important 4-game stand against the San Francisco Giants. Sorry, I was blanking on that for a second. San Francisco Giants, who pretty much on par win every other World Series for the past several years. They've been playing very well this year. They're right on the border of being a division leader, and they're currently the wild card leader. They have one of the better rotations in baseball. And they came to town for a 4-game stand against the Cubs, and it was going to be an interesting one because the Cubs had just come off a 3-game set against the Dodgers, and you'll be playing the Cardinals again soon. And this is a team you could very well face in the playoffs. So it was important to see what the Cubs had and what they could do. And the Cubs pitching was lights out. It was aces. And they took 3 out of 4 games. And the only game they lost was Jake Arrieta versus Madison Bumgarner. And that was Arrieta, for the most part, pitched really well. I don't know what else you could have asked from the guy. But the Cubs continue to struggle against Madison Bumgarner, and that's not surprising, as most teams seem to struggle against Madison Bumgarner. He's one of the best pitchers in baseball, and come postseason, he's just an absolute beast. But I like how this is starting to shape up as far as the playoffs look. The Cubs, it's almost a foregone conclusion that they're going to win this division. The magic number is down to 10 as of today, the time I'm recording this. And they have a 16.5 game lead on second place St. Louis. And St. Louis has a very good record. They're 72-64. So they're 8 games above 500, and the Cubs are 16 and a half up on them. It's absolutely sick. The Cubs are 41 games over 500. 41 games. They've got 25 games left on the season, and they only need a combination of 10 wins, and 10 of their wins and 10 Cardinal losses. So some combination that adds up to 10 to win this division. They have 25 games left. Even if they just go on a bad slump where they're only winning half their games, like when they went in their bad slump before, that's still 12, 13 wins. That's enough right there. And if they keep winning on the stretch that they're winning, there's absolutely no chance. So even if the Cardinals go 25-0 to finish the season, there's no chance that they're going to catch the Cubs. Virtually no chance. This would be absolutely just an unfathomable turn of events if the Cubs weren't able to win this division. And we talk about Jake Arrieta because he was such an important cog last season and won the Cy Young and was just absolutely unhittable for the second half of the season. But this year, he's had moments where he's been very good, but he's not that same guy that he was the beginning of the season and definitely the second half of last season. He's showing a lot of flaws, and part of it is he's changing the way he's pitching. I think we talked about it last week. If not, I meant to talk about it last week, is the slider is he's throwing way less sliders, and he's throwing less effectively when he does throw it. So it makes you wonder, is he not throwing it because it's not effective? Is he not throwing it because it hurts? Is he not throwing it? Whatever the reason is, this part of the reason he's not dominating like he was is one of his out pitches. He's not throwing it for strikes. But you're seeing the turnabout of John Lester. John Lester is becoming the pitcher that we thought we were going to get when we signed him. And last year he admitted he had a lot of troubles mentally getting over the hurdle of the expectations he had on him from this huge contract. And this year he's feeling much more comfortable, much more with it. And he's showing it in his pitching stats. So he's up at the tops of the National League in some of his pitching stats. But really the guy we need to talk about is Kyle Hendricks. And at every turn, people are poo-pooing that he's one of the better pitchers in baseball. At the beginning of the season is, well, he started to fade last year. Well, it's only this early in the season. Well, you've got Lester and Arrieta on this rotation and Lackey. He's the number five pitcher. How good can he possibly be? Well, he's having some nice statistics, but we'll see how it turns out at the end. We're coming down to the end of the baseball season. It's a 162-game season. It's a really long season. We only have 25 games left. And he is cruising to some of the better stats in the National League, and if not baseball. If you want to talk ERA, he's far and away best pitcher in baseball if you go strictly on ERA. He's got a 2.07 ERA. Next best in baseball is Madison Bumgarner at 2.51. That's basically a half a run difference in a game. And that's huge, especially when you consider that there's only 10 guys in all of baseball that have under a 3, and he's pushing to almost be under 2. Nobody except for him is under 2.5. Nobody. And he's allowed 3 or fewer runs in 19 straight starts. That's the longest streak in MLB this season. So 3 or fewer runs in 19 straight starts. And not only that, it's not that he's only pitching 4, 5, 6 innings. He's pitching 7, 8, 9 innings sometimes. That's just phenomenal, his ERA. If you want to go by his whip, his walks plus innings pitched, the guy is a .99. He's one of only two pitchers in all of baseball that have under a one. It's him and Max Scherzer. He's got a 4.1 WAR, which is really impressive, and he's a 14-7 record, which is a pretty good record. And there's a lot of games where he could have had the win easily, and he either got a no decision or a loss because the Cubs weren't putting runs on the board. Now, again, I'm not saying that Kyle Hendricks deserves the Cy Young. There's a lot of factors against him, especially considering that Madison Bumgarner and Max Scherzer both are pitching ridiculously well. The big knock on him is the WAR number. Although it's very good, there's a lot of guys that are much higher, especially American League pitchers. But we'll talk National League because he's up for the National League Cy Young. Is Max Scherzer is a 5.3. Clayton Kershaw is a 4.7, but I don't even know if he's eligible for that. Carlos Martinez from the St. Louis Cardinals is a 4.7. Madison Bumgarner is a 4.6. Tanner Roark from Washington is a 4.5. Johnny Cueto is a 4.5. And then Noah Syndergaard and Kyle Hendricks are tied next. So there's several pitchers ahead of him in WAR. And in the American League, God, there's a ton of pitchers ahead of him. Cole Hamels, Corey Kluber, Chris Sale, Michael Fulmer, Justin Verlander, Jose Quintana, Masahiro Tanaka. The American League cruising with the number of pitchers with great WAR scores. But when you put it all together, is he's putting together a really solid package for him to win Cy Young. Number one is, I don't think, with the amount of the season that he missed, I don't think Clayton Kershaw is going to be eligible for it. Madison Bumgarner is right up there, but it depends on how his team does down the stretch. I think that's going to have an effect on it. Because he has more losses than Kyle Hendricks, and a higher WHIP and a higher ERA, so it's going to be, honestly, I think it's going to be Max Scherzer versus Kyle Hendricks, and Scherzer has more wins, same number of losses, a better WHIP, and a higher WAR. It's going to depend on how these voters look at it and say, all right, how important was he to the Cubs? And are they going to knock him because he was the number five starter? That's a question you're going to have to ask yourself. But regardless of whether he wins or not, Kyle Hendricks definitely deserves to be in this conversation as we have it right now because he's just been so consistent. There's been no ups and downs. He's just been consistently good every time. When you need him to come up big, he comes up big. And he came up big again today, not only with his arm, but with his bat. The kid is phenomenal, and especially in his second year. A lot of people are going to knock him because he doesn't have this ace, quote-unquote ace stuff, and doesn't have a 100-mile-an-hour fastball. But the guy's command is phenomenal, and he's just very cerebral. And I'm not going to say he's as good as Greg Maddux, but it's very Greg Maddux-esque as far as the way he pitches. What else? There was a few things I wanted to talk about. I didn't want to go too deep into anything because we've talked ad nauseum about the Cubs for such a long season, and plus I'm not feeling so well. A few things I wanted to point out is that the Cubs pitching absolutely dominated the four-game series against the San Francisco Giants. And statistically, the Giants averaged over three up, three down innings per game. Six three up, three down innings per game for that four-game series. That says a lot about the hitting of the Giants and the pitching of the Cubs. And the only reason that they were in a lot of games is because, their pitching is phenomenal, and they were able to curb the Cubs for the most part as far as their hitters. But they were so aggressive on the base path, turning singles into doubles, doubles into triples, stealing bases. They stole third base twice in this series. That's the aggressive moves that was able to keep them in the games, and the Cubs weren't really ready for that. That's not how teams really attack them, and that's the pitchers weren't keeping guys on base, and you know there was that was the biggest factor is they were much more aggressive and really took it to the Cubs, and the Cubs still were able to withstand it and win three out of those four games, and should have been four out of four, but that's neither here nor there. Oh, and it was nice to see Jason Hayward have a great game. In the 13-inning game, he was able to knock in the tying run in the ninth and then hit the game-running RBI in the 13th. And that just hopefully is a big boost to him to get him to the point where he needs to be and helps him turn this season around, because we're going to need the guy's bat come, not only his bat, but his glove. We're going to need them both if this team is going to go on and win the World Series, because he's an important cog, and he's a very good hitter, and his statistics just absolutely are, as far as the plate go, he's been absolutely abysmal this season. And I kept saying, oh, he's going to turn around, but the guy just hasn't. And at this point, he's not going to turn around his season statistics, but if he's able to turn it around and play much better, it all becomes a wash in a couple of weeks when the playoffs start. That way, at that point, your single season and your regular season stats just don't matter. They don't matter at all. It's what you do in the postseason. And you've got Jorge Soler, who's been hitting well, Baez hitting well, and you finally have a turnaround game by Jason Hayward. It's hopefully that's all these pieces coming together. And also, I read that this team is statistically on pace to be the best fielding team in Major League history, which is fantastic, because they've had so many years where they've been an absolute piss-poor defensive team. And, you know, there's multiple phases to this game. It's not just hitting, it's not just pitching, but it's fielding as well. Because if your pitchers are better when your defensive players prevent runs. They have a bigger range as far as the infield positions. If they make more plays in the outfield, that means the pitcher is going to have less guys on base. He's going to give up less runs. The less runs you give up, the less runs you have to score to win ball games. These are all important things. And it seems so elementary, but it's really true. And the Cubs, it's not coincidental that one of the best seasons they've ever had in the regular season is at the same time when they have the best pitching statistically, the best fielding, and they're hitting very well. Not surprising at all. And then, let's see, what else? So they've got tomorrow and Wednesday against the Brewers in Milwaukee, which Milwaukee's almost like a home game light for them. They get Thursday off as a travel day, and then Friday, Saturday, Sunday, they go to Houston, which will be a nice little series, because Houston's a good team. Houston's, I think they're still up there in the wild card standings. They're starting to fall behind, but they're not too far out of it. They're two games out of the wild card spot, just behind Baltimore and Detroit. So it'll be nice to see some two teams that really took the same approach of completely tearing it all down and building it up from all within the organization. It'll be nice to see some of those players like Jose Altuve. And then after that, we've got a three-game set in St. Louis, which will be a fun series, because I think that's coming up, that might be the last time they play the Cardinals for the regular season. No, I take that back. They've got a three-game set at the end of the season on the 23rd, 24th, and 25th of this month. It's the last series in St. Louis the Cubs will have to play. We bring up the Cubs' magic number of 10. They've got two more games against the Brewers this week. Next week, they got three against the Brewers. The week after that, they've got one against the Brewers. Oh, I'm sorry. Next week, they have four against the Brewers. Then three against the Reds the following week. So right there, that's 9 potential wins against teams that they've absolutely dominated this season. So Cardinals need, if they have any hope whatsoever of catching the Cubs, they've got to sweep that whole three-game series to even dream about catching up to the Cubs. Because if for every loss that they have in that series, it's not like being in the standings where you gain a whole game. It's if you win a game, it just your magic number stays the same. But if you lose a game, that magic number is suddenly going to drop down by two because the Cubs get a win and the Cardinals get a loss. So if the Cubs are able to do what they should do against the Brewers, they could theoretically clinch the division against the Cardinals in St. Louis. Just saying. But that's really going to do it for baseball. Sorry, this has been a little bit of an erratic short episode, but like I said, anytime I stand up, I'm getting dizzy. So if any of you guys are doctors out there, let me know. and then this is going to move us to the Bears. And this is, realistically, I thought about not doing a show at all, but I'm getting tons of comments and questions from Bears fans because of the craziness that happened. Typically, I wasn't really going to talk much about the game against the Cleveland Browns because it just didn't matter. It's the fourth preseason game. It's the game where the bubble players do their best to put their best foot forward, hopefully make the roster. And then the next day, the roster cuts come out, and you have your final 53-man roster, and then you build your practice squad, et cetera, et cetera. It's fairly routine. But the Bears set their roster, set their practice squad, and then made a bunch of moves after that. So it's a very unusual season. So we'll try to sort this out a little bit. Originally, the Bears set their 53-man roster. I'm not going to read it to you, but they had three tight ends, six wide receivers, two quarterbacks, six defensive linemen, five outside linebackers, four inside linebackers, seven corners, five safeties, a kicker, a punter, and a long snapper, and four running backs. That was their roster, and it was a little unusual because typically they'll keep just as many, very close to as many offensive and defensive players. So you have your three specialists, your kicker, punter, holder, or your long snapper, and that brings you down to 50. And so you usually do 25-25 or 24-26. But I think the Bears were at like 23-27, which is a little bit unusual for a roster, which made you think that maybe they were going to make some moves. And they absolutely do. They make a move by bringing in Josh Sitton, who was a three consecutive time second team All-Pro at guard that was cut by the Packers. We'll talk more about that in a minute. And they bring him in because he was a surprise cut and don't let him go and sign him to a three-year deal. So then that plays musical roster, musical offensive line. Because suddenly, he's definitely better at guard than Cody Whitehair. Maybe not in the future, but right now he's a three-time All-Pro, and he was a leader of the offensive line for the Packers and a leader in their clubhouse. And so the Bears make that musical move, keep Leno at left, Massey at right. They move or keep Kyle Long at his right guard spot. They move Josh Sitton to the left guard spot, and they move Cody Whitehair to be center and Ted Larson back to being the backup. What else? And then to make a roster move for him, they had to get rid of somebody because they had already had a 53-man roster. They move on from Cornelius Edison and... Oh, I'm sorry. They move on from Amini Silatolu, who was a veteran offensive lineman that they had to be on the roster spot. So they kind of moved along from him. What else did they do? They claimed Eric Kush off waivers, the center from the Rams, and to make a move for him, they released Cornelius Edison, who was the backup center. And then they signed Cravon LeBlanc from the Patriots as cornerback, and then so to make room for him, they got rid of Demontre Hurst. And then the craziest of them all is the Bears. The Bears got rid of Robbie Gould, who is their all-time leading scorer, and I think he was a Bear for 11 years now. And they got rid of him, and they signed kicker Connor Barth. So the 53-man roster got shaken up quite a bit just in the last 24 hours. So first... I think I'm going to address some of the questions and concerns I have, the questions and concerns I've gotten from you guys. And then we'll talk about what I think about the 53-man roster and the guys that the Bears did cut at that point. So first of all, the elephant in the room is I've got so many comments about why in the world would they cut Robbie Gould but keep Jay Cutler? The Bears don't know what they're doing. And this is especially concerning because one of the people saying this was Michael Wilbon from ESPN and the Washington Post. I'm going to break this down for you. And again, this is a by the fans for the fans show, and I'm not going to knock your opinions. But reality is one doesn't have to do with the other one. Is Robbie Gould... has nothing to do with Jay Cutler. They're exclusive. They don't have anything to do with each other. So moving on from Robbie Gould has no bearing on what happens with Jay Cutler. That's first of all. So to tie them together doesn't make any sense. They have nothing to do with each other. Let's analyze this from statistics' sake. Is Robbie Gould is an aging kicker. He's one of the highest paid kickers in the league. But statistically, he's getting worse and worse every year. And it finally, last year, he was bad. He wasn't very good. And the Bears they're not going to be able to just go and dominate teams to the point where missing easy field goals, easy by NFL standard field goals, they're going to be able to overcome that. Is the Bears need a kicker that's going to be clutch and is going to make their field goals. And they can't be paying a guy $3+ million a year to miss field goals. And if you watch the game against Cleveland, is Robbie Gould missed an extra point and he had a field goal blocked because and that field goal blocked was on him. Wasn't that when somebody made a miraculous play. He had a low trajectory. So that was the final straw. I'm sure Ryan Pace tried to move him, but nobody else is going to trade for an aging kicker that misses a lot of field goal that makes a lot of money. So the Bears, and my biggest question mark, honestly, was why they didn't bring in competition at the beginning of training camp and then cut Robbie Gould that way. That's realistically what I thought was going to happen. I was shocked when they announced that he had no competition going into training camp and then he made the roster. But from what I'm reading is that the Bears felt that there was nobody on the street that they could bring in that would be able to compete with Robbie Gould, despite Robbie Gould not being the kicker he once was. And when Josh Barth got released, is they saw him, he was somebody that kicked for Denver, John Fox knows him that way, and they felt that he was as good or better than what you have in Robbie Gould, and he's going to do it for less money. they decided to make the move and pull the trigger and part ways with Robbie Gould and sign Connor Barth. Part of the reason also, and don't let this fool you, is remember when the Trestman era was here. After Lovey left, remember who all the big mouths were that were never stopped talking about, oh, this coaching regime, oh, this and that, and this is why this sucks, and telling the secrets of what went on in the locker room. The biggest big mouths were Lance Briggs, Brian Urlacher, Robbie Gould, Martellus Bennett. How many of them are Chicago Bears still? All gone. Urlacher, they didn't even give a chance to be on this team. Lance Briggs, they parted ways with because he was a bit loudmouth and his play didn't back it up anymore. If he was in the heart of his career, they would figure out a way to do with it. You have Martellus Bennett. You're already thin at tight end, and you decide to part ways with a very, very good tight end in this league because he's a loudmouth. And Robbie Gould was right there. Whenever you had a lot of people citing sources, Robbie Gould would be one of those people, one of those unnamed sources that was bad-mouthing people. And sometimes he even attributed and put his name on it. So why in the world are you going to keep paying a guy who is a headache in the locker room? You don't want to. It's bad enough if you have a headache guy who's a superstar tight end or superstar quarterback or superstar wide receiver. When he's a former superstar kicker, he's a kicker. And he's a headache, and he's not a superstar anymore, and he misses a lot of field goals, and he makes a lot of money for his position. You move on with him. It's easy. People are getting so upset about Robbie Gould. He was your kicker. He kicked the ball. It's all he did. Move on. Move on. I see you if you're upset about Brian Urlacher. But the thing is, the NFL doesn't care about players. The NFL is going to keep moving on and moving on, and they're going to move on without players. One day, Tom Brady's not going to be able to play well anymore. The NFL will move on without him. Tom Brady will not be playing in the league again. This NFL will still continue on. Peyton Manning is no longer in the NFL. Guess what? We're still having games. It's still the most popular sport in this country by far and away. Players don't matter. The NFL entity itself matters. The Bears organization matters. The Bears will continue on. Players, even the players you love the most, eventually won't be able to play where they were, or they'll leave for more money elsewhere for other reasons. This team and this organization will continue on. You need to be able to accept that, especially when it's a kicker. Okay? It's a kicker. So Robbie Gould, gone. And if one more move I forgot to mention is the Bears brought in a veteran tight end and Logan Paulson, who was with the Washington Redskins. Is they parted ways with Kari Lee and brought in Logan Paulson at the 11th hour. And I think the Bears are going to try to put Kari Lee on the practice squad, but he hasn't cleared waivers yet. He should sometime tomorrow, and if he does, the Bears will be able to put him on the practice squad. So with that, let's sort of talk about the roster itself and the put-togetherness of it. The Bears chose to bring two quarterbacks on the roster. Now, this says a lot. Is Connor Shaw, I think, was a guy that they really were looking at in a positive way, and that he was somebody that they felt was going to be part of this organization going forward. And that was evidenced by the fact that when he got hurt and is out for the season, they cut David Fales, who's been on this team for a couple of years now. They cut David Fales, and I was like, okay, they cut David Fales. That means they're going to put him on the practice squad. Nope. David Fales doesn't go to the practice squad. Instead, they bring Matt Barkley, the former USC quarterback and Arizona Cardinals quarterback and Philadelphia Eagle quarterback. They bring him and put him on the practice squad. So they just go a completely different direction. So quarterbacks, they have two, and Cutler and Hoyer will be their on their active roster. I suspected they were going to take four running backs, and three of them were a lock, and that was Langford, Kadeem Carey, Jordan Howard. That was pretty easy. But I honestly thought Jaquizz Rodgers would be a guy that they would keep on the roster because he was a veteran presence, the most experienced as far as being a blocker. And that's part of the thing about the running back position in the NFL is there's a lot of guys that can run and hit holes and do those things. But what makes you an NFL running back versus a college running back is your ability to block for the quarterback. And that's what prevents a lot of young guys from getting more time on the field is because their inability to block. In the NFL level, you can't have your quarterback get killed. So you need that running back to block. And that's something that Matt Forte excelled at, is being a blocker. It's going to be the biggest thing I think they'll miss for him. And Jaquizz Rodgers was the most veteran guy, and I felt that that would keep him for that reason. But instead, the Bears decided to keep a fullback in Paul Lisicki, which, based on the tight end rotation that they kept and bringing in a traditional fullback, that the Bears are really going to try to make this a power running team. They kept six wide receivers, which is not that surprising. But two of the surprise cuts were they decided to part ways with Mark Mariani, who was a favorite of Jay Cutler last year during the injury-depleted wide receiver season, and Daniel Braverman, who was the seventh round draft pick that everybody was a fan favorite already coming out of was it Western Michigan. So it's both of those guys gone. Mark Mariani gone for good, and Daniel Braverman was put on the practice squad, so he's eligible to come up if there's an injury. So the Bears at that point have kept Alshon Jeffrey, Kevin White, Eddie Royal, Josh Bellamy, Deontay Thompson, who's also going to be the kick returner, and Cameron Meredith. And I'm guessing Eddie Royal will probably be the punt returner. So Cameron Meredith, the second-year pro, they decided to keep him instead of Mark Mariani. So the interesting thing about this is they really only have one slot receiver. The rest are all outside guys. So Eddie Royal's your lone slot receiver, and he's coming off concussion protocol and is finally starting to practice. Tight ends, the Bears kept three: Zach Miller, Logan Paulson, and Greg Scruggs. Greg Scruggs basically won the crowded tight end competition after converting from a defensive end last season. Basically, the Bears kept him because they like his physical blocking style. And Logan Paulson is definitely an inline blocking kind of guy. So two out of your three tight ends are inline blocking guys, and Zach Miller is your lone receiving threat. So again, coupled with Paul Lisicki, you're really looking to dominate on the run here. We've already gone through offensive linemen, but you have your starters in Charles Leno, now Sitton will be your left guard, Cody Whitehair will be your center, Kyle Long at right guard, and Bobby Massey at right tackle. You opted for Ted Larson and Mike Adams to be your veteran guys. Those are going to be your veteran backups. So they opted rather to go with veteran guys at backup positions rather than youth. Oh, sorry. Also Eric Kush. So Mike Adams, the fourth year pro. Eric Kush, fourth year pro, and Ted Larson, the seventh-year pro, are going to be your backups. Charles Leno is probably your youngest offensive line. Oh, sorry, Cody Ware's rookie, but Charles Leno, third-year pro out of Boise State, will be your left tackle. Kyle Long, who's in his fourth year this year and just got a contract extension, a nice four-year, $40 million contract extension, be your right guard. Defensive line is the Bears went with parted ways with Ego Ferguson, so that basically wiped out former general manager Phil Emery's second-round pick from 2014. And I want to say I called that one is when I mocked or when I scouted that 2014 draft is I wanted nothing to do with Ego Ferguson. I didn't think he was very good. He played a little bit better than I thought he would, but still not worthy of being on a defense that's more than awful. So the Bears' defensive line is going to consist of Akeem Hicks, Eddie Goldman, Mitch Unrein. Those will be your starters. And then Jonathan Bullard, Cornelius Washington, Will Sutton will be in your rotation. And Will Sutton must have worked his butt off to make it on there because he's a total three technique guy, totally fits into a 4-3 defense, not a 3-4 defense. And he played his way into this rotation. Good for him. I like Will Sutton. Your outside linebackers is you have Pernell McPhee, who's now on the PUP list. So he is going to miss the first six games of the season. First six games. So we won't see him for a while. And the Bears, I'm guessing Sam Acho is the guy that's going to hold on to Pernell McPhee's spot until he comes back. But your outside linebackers as of right now are Willie Young, Lamar Houston, Leonard Floyd, Sam Acho, and Christian Jones. Christian Jones converting from being an inside linebacker last year. Inside linebacker is Danny Trevathan, Jarrell Freeman will be your starters, and then Jonathan Anderson and Nick Kwiatkowski will be your inside or your backups. The fourth-round rookie, Kwiatkowski, solidified his spot by flashing in the preseason debut on Thursday, coming off of an injury. John Timu, who was a fan favorite and played fairly well last year, was put on the practice squad. So you'll see the long ponytail eventually. He's on the practice squad. Cornerbacks, the Bears kept seven. Tracy Porter, Kyle Fuller, Bryce Callahan, DeAndre Hall, Sherrick McManus, Jacoby Glenn, and the new guy that they got from the Patriots in Cravion LeBlanc. And Demontre Hurst was cut to make a place for him, and Demontre Hurst was put on the practice squad. Clearly, the Bears felt a lot of upside with Jacoby Glenn because they opted to keep him over Devontae Bowsby, who moved to the practice squad, and a host of others. And I think the reason the Bears kept seven cornerbacks is because of the injuries right now. Tracy Porter's finally starting to practice. Kyle Fuller's finally starting to practice. And DeAndre Hall's a rookie. So you've just got a lot of inexperience and injury on that core group of guys. So they wanted to keep extra guys to see where they're at. Come a couple weeks in. Safeties, the Bears kept five. Adrian Amos, Harold Jones, Quarty, Deion Bush, Chris Przinski, and DeAndre Houston Carson. So it's pretty surprising because the Bears kept a promising mix of youth and talent, but basically this is a really unproven group, and somebody's going to have to step up and win playing time at this position. In the safety rotation, it is going to be whoever's making plays is going to get the playing time. There's no big name that you have to overcome as far as a barrier. And finally, the one last spot I want to talk about is the long snapper. Is the Bears decided to cut Patrick Scales, who was their long snapper last season, in favor of Aaron Brewer. And Patrick Scales was in his car driving down to visit family in Louisville from Bears training camp or Bears practice, gets a phone call to turn back around, and they decided in less than 24 hours that they're going to keep Patrick Scales and get rid of Aaron Brewer. So a lot of moves, a lot of things going on. It's going to be an interesting season. You're not going to be able to tell me that the Bears don't look at this as a rebuilding year because of the way that they're at the last minute shuffling things around. That makes back-to-back seasons that 1 week before the regular season, they're shuffling offensive line, not just who's the starter, but who's playing what position. Last year, it was the week before the game started, you moved Kyle Long to right tackle. And this year, 1 week before the season starts, less than 1 week before the season starts, is you're moving Cody Whitehair from guard to center. And you brought in Josh Sitton to be your left guard. And it was interesting because head coach John Fox said that he feels that Cody Whitehair's best position is center. Now, the thing that bothers me about that is if you're the Bears and you feel that Cody Whitehair's best position is center, did you waste a pick with Hronus Grassu? Because you felt that he was your center of the future, and I really believe that too, barring that injury. So why did you go and draft another guy at that same position? Were you hoping that Cody Whitehair would just develop into a guard, or he'd play guard very well too and just play center a little better? What did you foresee there? I don't really know. But hopefully the Bears do a lot of work this 1 week before the regular season starts against the Houston Texans, because that Houston Texans defensive line is coming for Jay Cutler. And the way that this offensive line played during the preseason, I don't know how much Josh Sitton's going to help solidify this, but God help us if they can't play better than they did in the preseason. But I see that the way the Bears organization is trying to go is they're trying to infuse a lot of youth, and they're trying to get better on the fly. And as a rebuilding team, without calling themselves a rebuilding team, is they're willing to make moves like at the 11th hour of signing a new guard to be your starter and shifting your current guard to be center. That's the type of things that you have happen. So I'm getting a lot of questions and comments and people that are confused and not know what's going on, is that this is a team that is in a rebuilding mode. Sure, they're going to try to compete, and with the division that they're in, Detroit is, they lost Megatron, and they were a bad team last year to begin with. The Bears could theoretically beat them. The team that won the division last year, the Minnesota Vikings, they lost their quarterback with less than 2 weeks prior to the season starting to a season-ending knee injury. And they go out and trade for Sam Bradford and way overpay for Sam Bradford. Now, typically in this show, I only talk about Chicago sports, but this is sort of going to affect the Bears and how the Bears move going forward because they're in the division. The Bears are going to play them twice. Is the Minnesota Vikings got absolutely desperate in offering a first and a fourth for Sam Bradford, who is not very good and didn't want to play for that team anyway and was going to eventually be pushed out. So I believe the second week of the season, the Bears play the Eagles, who now have their starting quarterback is going to be number two overall pick rookie Carson Wentz, who hasn't played much this offseason or this preseason because of a rib injury. They're hoping he's back, and even if he's back, he hasn't had a lot of playing time. So the Bears are going to be playing against a kid who hasn't played much, who's a rookie, and that's fares well for the Bears. I think the Minnesota Vikings with Sam Bradford are still not going to be very good. I just don't think he's a very good quarterback, and they're going to have a good defense, and they're going to have a good offensive line with a good running game, but they're going to be much easier to beat. And I think that getting rid of Josh Sitton from the Packers is going to make that offensive line of the Green Bay Packers much worse and make it, I think Aaron Rodgers is going to be, he's going to feel the pressure there. So these are all positives for the Bears, and I think that's part of the reason that they're not calling this a rebuilding is because they have a legitimate shot if they stay healthy and they play to their potential, they could be competing for second place in this division and potentially a wild card spot if they play to their potential. But I think there's too many question marks and too many holes to fulfill that potential, if you know what I'm saying. And I think the final thing I want to talk about is I had somebody that messaged me and asked if Josh Sitton is so good that the Bears signed him to a 3-year deal and are making the starter at the bat, why did the Packers get rid of him in the first place? And that's a really good question. It's one that myself, I had to really dig into it to find out more. I only watch Packers games if it's the playoffs or if they're playing the Bears, so I don't have this huge frame of reference of what the Packers are doing because I'm not a Packer fan. But from what I'm understanding is that this was a very Vince Lombardi type move. Josh Sitton is 30 years old. He had a little bit of a sore back last year. He still played very well. Was a second team All-Pro. But the way the Packers look at it is they want to maintain youth and they want to maintain inexpensive players. He was a fairly expensive player. He's one of the highest paid guards in the league. But he's also one of the better guards in the league. And that he was going into his final year of his deal and he wanted a contract extension. When he wasn't given the contract extension right away, he maintained a very cold shoulder type relationship with the Packers organization. And Ted Thompson decided that this was not something he wanted to mess with. So first of all, he moved up he changed the order of how he was going to award contract extensions to. So once Sitton decided that he was going to give them the cold shoulder when they didn't talk contract with him, they moved left tackle David Bakhtiari and center J.C. Tretter ahead of him on their contract extension priority list. And that really pissed him off. Ted Thompson clearly thought that Andrew Sitton was going to be a locker room problem because of the contract issue. And because he was already a high-paid player and 30 years old, and they were worried about that this would be a locker room issue with the contract extension issue, that they decided to part ways with him. If you listen to beat writers for the Packers, most of them will tell you that they didn't notice any drop-off in the play last year of Josh Sitton. One noted that he had a tiny bit of a downturn, but still, he was second-team All-Pro, and he was respected in the locker room, and he was one of the dominant personalities on that offensive line. And he was an absolute shocker as far as guys that were cut from the roster. People were absolutely shocked when it happened. And the outcry that Bears fans are having about Robbie Gould getting cut, the Packer fans are more outraged about this guy being cut. And rightfully so, because he's protecting one of the best quarterbacks in this league and the guy who keeps you on the top of this division every year. You want to make sure that he's protected, and Josh Sitton was able to do that. And when you suddenly cut him for very petty reasons, fans react accordingly. So I feel like the way that this deal works is that if he can't play, they move on from him, and there's not that much of an issue as far as the way the contract is worded from what I'm hearing. I haven't seen the final wording of it, but from what I understand, it's not a lot of guaranteed money. So if the Bears were able to move on from him because he couldn't play or he had a bad back or he just wasn't what he was advertised as, is you can move on from him easily and move, you know, next year, move Cody Whitehair back to guard and then Hronus Grasu back to center and not miss a beat. So we'll see how that goes. And when they asked Josh Sitton why he decided to sign with the Bears, if it was as payback from the Packers, he said, no, they brought me in first and got a deal done. He said, plus I like the weather here. It's way too hot in the South. So good for him. And I guess that's really all I have to say. I told you this was going to be a short episode. If you guys have questions, comments, concerns about anything Chicago sports teams related, please hit us up. Twitter.com or Facebook.com/SwirskySports. Twitter @ Swirsky Sports. SwirskySports.com. Thank you guys so much for listening. Make sure you hit subscribe on however you listen to it, whether that be iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube. And tell your friends, leave comments, etc., etc. Thank you guys so much for listening, and until next time, bear down. And when we start our next episode, we'll be talking about the Bears' first game of the regular season. Keep that in mind. All right, thank you guys for listening, and bear down.
Come, Glenn! What a lucky break! The good Lord wants the Cubs to win!
We thank Ditka and God for all they have provided.
Cubs win! Cubs win! Cubs win!
Oh, I don't want her. You can have her. She's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van.
And she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on the plains.
Bears 31 to -7.
The Bears!
Oh, when the Bears go bearing down.